You're tuned in to the This Woman Knows podcast network, holding space for women evolving into their best selves. And now, here's your host, Deneen L. Garrett.
Hey, everybody. Okay, we're back. Women of Color, an intimate conversation. And today I am talking to somebody across the pond, as they say. We have LaDonya Lawrence. She is checking in from the UK. And I'm excited to hear her perspective coming from, again, she's in the UK, her background being a well-being coach, equality and diversity trainer, and a PhD candidate researching Caribbean dance as a form of resistance. And so we have been talking a lot about rest as resistance and things of that nature. So we're going to get into the conversation, but I do want to mention that she's also the author of Back Yourself, a Well-Being Guide to Healing from Racial Trauma, and the host of the Intersections podcast. So let's get into it. So LaDonya, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. It's my pleasure to speak with you today. As a matter of fact, I want to shout out, I think the UK is my number one international audience. So, so we have a treat.
Okay, that's exciting.
I know, yes. Right? So, and so then Canada is number two, I believe, and then Ukraine.
Oh.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wow.
They're like number three. So, all righty then. So,
nice.
Let's get into the journey of healing. LaDonya, what has cleared your path into well-being and equity work, specifically focusing on BIPOC mental health?
Yes, well, I've been working in the field for quite a long time. And I think from childhood, I always knew that I wanted to do something that helped people. And I came from a family that had a lot of helpers in it. My mother was a social worker at the time, and she was very much like, you know, we're a family that serves, we want to give back, we want to serve the community. So I always kind of had that in my blood. And I did my undergraduate degree in psychology, and then I did my postgraduate in coaching, and I was teaching dance, doing one-to-one coaching, and I was enjoying it, but there was a part of me that was distressed by the inequity that I could see in different groups of people. Black women, and then people of color as a whole. And then really after the pandemic hit, of course, wherever we were, the whole world was silenced. We saw the very, very horrendous murder of George Floyd. We saw police brutality in the States, but also in the UK as well. And that was a thing that really catapulted me to say, I need to make this a focus. And that's when I started working exclusively around well-being for BIPOC people, and also doing anti-racism work for allies and for white people who want to understand how they can do more. So it's been quite a journey.
Yeah, I bet. And so have you noticed a change in your work or how you have to approach your work since the inauguration in the U.S., right? Because we know that, I mean, that's happening to us in the U.S., but it's actually
yes, global. Exactly. And it has that ripple effect. Legislation hasn't changed here at the time of recording in the UK, although there are whispers. But what it has done is made organizations more afraid. So it's made them more afraid to do work around DEI, or as we call it in the UK, EDI, whatever we want to call it, equity work. People are starting to get more afraid to have those conversations, which is so sad, because we got to a place where I felt I was able to be much more open than I had across my lifetime. So it's, you know, it is a regression of sorts, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now, you know, it makes me kind of think about the title of your book, you know, Back Yourself, right? So I do want to know, you know, where did that come from? You know, what does that mean to you personally and professionally? And then again, just reflection, it's like we're being backed, you know, we're being pushed back to years before, you know, a time in the past. At least that's the attempt, right, to push us back. But what does Back Yourself mean to you from the perspective of your book?
Yes. So my book is based on my years of coaching BIPOC people. So in there, it's case studies and stories, and also stories from my own life. And I had so many different titles that I was cycling through. And I had a mentoring session with a really well-established author and coach. And she was a white woman. And she said to me, in the UK, the literary field is white, it's middle class, and it's middle-aged. And a lot of the language that you're using, I'm worried that publishers are not going to resonate with it or understand what you're trying to say with your title. So I went back to the drawing board and said, okay, I'm going to have to be really explicit. And I thought to myself, what do I want the readers to be able to take away or to do after reading this book? And I grew up in London, and London, well, if you've got people from the UK or anyone from the US who watches Top Boy, that's the kind of slang that I had. And I was like, I want them to back themselves. And I was like, back yourself. And I said it in my very London accent. I was like, that's what I want. I want people to back themselves, stand up for themselves, stand in their truth, and be able to stand in their power. And personally and professionally, to me, there's not that much difference because I was seeing so much workplace bullying for people of color, for black people, that I was like, we need to be able to back ourselves in all scenarios where possible.
And so just thinking about that. So the podcast is to empower Black women, women of color, and we can be empowered by different ways. Do you feel
Yes.
better about the title that you ended up going with? Do you feel that that was a better choice for you?
Yes, I do. And I think what is important is exactly what you said. Everyone has a different way that they back their self. There's no one shoe fits all. So, for example, I have lots of reflective prompts and lots of journaling exercises and lots of affirmations, because what it might mean for me to back myself is not what it might mean for someone else. So one thing that I don't want people to do, and I say this in the book as well, is feel guilty when they've been a recipient of aggression or harm. Sometimes it's not safe for us to speak out, or sometimes our situation is compromised, or it's not good for our well-being to fight constantly. So sometimes backing yourself and saying, I'm going to step away and I'm going to journal tonight, or I'm going to take a bath, or I'm going to go and speak this through with someone who loves me. So it's not about, necessarily always continuing to fight, because we as women of color have had to do that so much. It's finding the way to back yourself that works for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I asked the question because I do want those who are, listening or watching to know that, when someone comes to you and they suggest something, to listen to it, right? Hear what they're saying, and then you choose and decide what you want to do with it. Like, you don't have to take what they say to you, their recommendation. You don't have to do it, but just listen to it, because it could be that small voice, giving you a different perspective of something that may work out better, which it did for you in this case. So I definitely
That's
want
so
to
true.
bring that
So,
up.
so true.
So let's get into racial trauma and empowerment. So what are some often unseen ways racial trauma affects the well-being of us?
Yes. So something that I would consistently hear with the clients that I work with, and also everything I talk about I've experienced as a woman of color, is that we have to suppress ourselves. We can't bring our whole self to work. And it's just so common. And that over years and years and years, it has a detrimental effect on self-esteem, on our confidence, on our posture, on our physical health, when you can't be who you are. And I think that's the part that's so taken for granted for people who aren't people of color, because they can show up in many ways as their full self in a way that we just can't, because we get judged. Maybe our hair or our clothing or our jewelry or our faith, it's a whole thing. And when I was just graduating and getting into the work world, I would really change my hair. I would make sure not to wear my big afro out, all of these kind of things, not to wear the jewelry that I wanted to wear. And that was a suppression of me. And I think that is a really massive unseen way that the trauma can impact us.
Oh, absolutely. And so the whole time, as soon as I ask the question, I'm thinking about hair. Hair is the number one thing that came for me because I'm sure there's probably not one Black woman who does not have a hair story, right? And for me, when I was in corporate, and if I were going to events, I had to think about, okay, how do I want to wear my hair? Right? There was so much thought putting into how do I want to wear my hair? And honestly, even still today, like I'm no longer in corporate. However, I'm going to an event next week and I'm thinking, well, how do I want to wear my hair? Like, I don't want to show up in braids, but I do want it, up because the weather and I don't want it to turn into an afro, unintentionally. So, hair is something that we really put a lot of thought into. And that's just, again, those who are watching or listening, just know that that is real for Black women, especially. And other women of color, right? Latinas, I know, have is hair. You want to wear it curly or straight, and all those things. So hair is huge. It definitely is huge, in
Yes,
the way that
it is.
we are microaggressed often.
Exactly. Asked all these questions. You can just be, I'm sure many women of color have just been living their life when someone's reached out and tried to touch,
That's it.
question, and it's not acceptable, you know. And it makes us feel like we're, animals in the zoo.
Like, how dare, I remember it was a couple years ago and I was at the airport and I did have my hair and it was a piece of art, right? A look at art, right? It was very artistic. And this woman said to me, she did compliment my hair and she said, I think she might even said how it looked like a piece of art. And I appreciated it. And at the same time, it made me feel a way because I'm not on display for you or others, right? So it's like that's something that we fight with. It's like a duality type thing. It's like, yes, I want people to appreciate it, but why do you appreciate it? Right? Or way are you appreciating it? You know what I'm saying? So that's hard for us, and it's something that we have to deal with, right?
100%. And something that I get asked by allies who come to my training courses is, but they say things like, but I'm just curious. And that's how I make connections with people. And what I say is, has that question ever been asked to you? So we don't go up to white people and ask them about their hair. White people have hair extensions too. They have augmentation on their bodies, on their faces, all of these kind of things, but they don't get questioned in about their body or their appearance or their clothing in the way that women of color do, whether that's our hair, whether that's a hijab, whether that's cultural attire. They don't get that. So if you don't get that, what gives you the right to ask? And that's something that I always say, have that moment of thought before you ask a question.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I definitely do want to kind of pivot to the allies, but that just reminds me though, now, like when I'm watching, like reading on social media threads, whatever it is, like we're flipping it. We are starting to say things back, right? Like I something how people were like clutching their purses when we're doing things to them that they've done to us historically, right?
So true.
It's like, oh
Things are changing.
right. Okay, so for allies who truly want to help, what do you recommend to them? Like, what type of support or education, do you offer?
Yes. So I would say always anti-racism or anti-oppression training is always a good base, because I have many people in my professional network and personal network who are kind-hearted, usually women, but also men too, that really have equity as a core value. But if they haven't done work into understanding the systems of oppression, there's no way that they can fulfill the role of allyship that they want to. So even understanding what racism is, why it was created, understanding their place, their privilege, and their role in the system of harm, and also understanding that every single one of us has the potential to cause harm. And that's okay. We can accept that and we can just work to be better every day. It's not about shaming yourself. It's about accepting, okay, I probably will cause harm at some point on this journey. I just have to be humble with it. keep learning, keep the education going, and try again next time and say sorry if and when it's necessary. And that's what I try and do with groups that I'm not part of, as well, to support and be an ally.
Yeah, and so do you, let's see, how do I want to do it? Do you package it in a way to where it's palatable for them, or do you kind of come, this is what it is? You know, how, you know, a more direct approach. How, which route do you take?
I think I do give a more direct approach, but I try to make it in a way that people understand. And I teach it in a way that it's a collective issue, because racism and the system of white supremacy, although they privilege from it, it doesn't serve them either. To be in a body that is so heavily privileged, that does something to your soul and spirit. To have ancestors who caused so much harm, that does something to your soul and spirit. So for actually for them to undo that generational trauma themselves is actually a really positive thing for them, for their lineage, for their ancestors, as well as for ours. So I really approach it in a way of, this is not white people feeling sorry for people of color. It's white people also healing and undoing the work of their ancestors, because it's not just our story.
And I love the perspective of it's healthy for them to put it right, to change that, because I really never heard that perspective. I have not really heard how it has a positive impact on them as well. So yeah, so that's very interesting. So I'm sure you read the book, I think it's How to Be an Anti-Racist or something by that Beverly D'Angelo. So we read, that was a book that we were able to read at work in the group setting, and I so happened to be the only person of color, the only Black person in my particular group. And it was interesting, right? Because coming from a place of privilege, like most of us, nobody, of course they never thought about it. Like one thing I mentioned to them is when it's a Black person or a non-white person who's committed a crime, on the news, they're going to tell you it was a Black person, it was Hispanic person, Mexican, whatever. They're going to tell you that. But when it's white, they don't tell you because that's the default. And they had never realized that, right? Because they're coming from a place of privilege. Like, they, why would they?
But also I would say something that the white community, another reason why it's useful for them to heal, is there's a loss of culture there. If we think about the States, white people are of course from there. They're Europeans, but the disconnect to European heritage is gone. So something that's really beautiful about our communities and our communities of color is that we do have strong culture, strong heritage, strong ancestry, and we can draw on that. And we have the path of our ancestors walking with us. But for a lot of the European community, they've lost that. They don't have that, so they're anchorless.
Yes. Well, here's the deal. I think they're going to be pushed back into it. Right? Because again, the undoing is to get it back to a place. And so, like, even in that book, I remember reading a passage where it was an Italian guy, and he went to us, like an anti-racist something, and was saying how, at one point, how they discriminate against us. Yeah. Right, you know what I'm saying? And so now I can see coming back to that. So everybody's going to end up kind of going into their own, pockets. It's not just, okay, we're against, the Hispanic Latinos, and we want to segregate the Black folks. They're going to piece that up too.
Yes,
You know, and break
exactly.
up, right?
Yes, 100%, which is this, that's a first for the white community. That they don't, it's a struggle at the moment, but it's for the greater good, because if we all come back to ourselves, we'll be a stronger unit.
I like that. Come back to ourselves and then also to appreciate it and then still into the collective, right? To understand that, okay, we do have a very similar, or we have the same enemy, if you will.
Yes.
right?
Yeah.
And that enemy is racism and racist supremacy and all of those things. So right
Yes.
now we are talking about anti-racism, and let's get into
Yes.
the equitable system. So what's one misconception workplaces have about anti-racism training?
Yes. I think a lot of workplaces come into it thinking that it's about maybe celebrating. So having Black History Month, or in the UK, we'll have like a South Asian festival or East Asian festival, and you bring in some food and everyone comes down at their lunch break and has a little chat, and that's the end of it. But actually, that does, I mean, that's a pleasant thing to do in your lunch break. But actually, what we need to do is work on policy, is work on, is your workplace a safe place for people of color to work? Are there processes that, if there is racism, someone can safely report? Are all members of personnel and management trained in anti-oppression? That's really what it's about. The light touch kind of, oh, we're gonna, I don't know, have a day where we play Bob Marley and, I don't know, eat jerk chicken. That's just, it doesn't mean anything. And that's the kind of performative thing I will see again and again and again. So whenever I have a consultation with a workplace, I make sure that they know I'm coming in with a racial justice lens. And by the end of this session, people are going to understand what racism is, what the myths are, what they can do about it, and how we can show up for each other is going to be really clear.
Yeah. So the equity piece, and that's what you heavily like lean into, right? Because you're wanting,
Yes.
the systems and all of those things, like you said, policy. And so that's where the equity comes in. And there is a place for what you talked about. And so that's, what falls up under like the employee resource groups, the affinity groups. That's part of what
Yes.
they're doing, the celebrating, because we do want to celebrate and safe places, and having a safe place is a place where, we are celebrating our cultural heritage and things of that. And then there's the equity work. So it's everything has its place. Right. And but yeah, so you're making it clear that, hey, this is what I'm coming to do. These are the things that we want to accomplish, because we do want it to be equitable. And so this is the work that's required.
Exactly. Like the events and the joy and the fun is the next level up, but we
Yeah.
need the base. If people of color don't feel comfortable in this working environment, we're not going to enjoy the Black History Month celebration. So let's not start with that. Let's start with creating a safe base, a safe environment, and then we can celebrate.
Okay.
There's a bypassing.
Now, do you look at, so for me, I look at it as it's an and. I believe that we can do both at the same time. I
Yes.
fully get where you're coming from, right? Because it could just be performative if we're just celebrating, but we're not doing anything else, right?
Exactly.
And
I
that's what,
agree with you. It needs to be both.
yeah, I agree that it does need to be both, and I do feel that it does need to be heavily towards the equity piece, because I'm just thinking about, in my experience, it's like, yeah, we love it, and yes, our company, we were, number one on this. We got 100% on the human resources, campaigns, survey. However, I don't necessarily feel safe. I don't necessarily feel this, that, and the other. So yeah, I think that it's an and that and needs
Yes.
to. Oh. So we have visitors here. My cats are like all over the place. Like they want their time, but no. So it's, but we definitely need to lean into the equity. Okay, so let's move
Yes.
to movement as resistance. So you're researching Caribbean dance as resistance. How did that
Yes.
become part of your academic and wellness journey?
Well, I was very blessed to experience Carnival in the UK, Notting Hill Carnival, which is the biggest Caribbean carnival outside of the Caribbean itself. And it's a massive part of the British Caribbean culture. And my mum's from Barbados, and I just always grew up listening to the music, being involved in carnival, enjoying it. And as I delved deeper and deeper into it, and as I got older and started understanding the history of Caribbean dance, specifically what's called masquerade, I learned more and more about how it was a response to enslavement and how, our ancestors were forbidden from speaking their language, playing their music, and reveling. And the African enslaved people found a way to reclaim their movement and dance through carnival. And I've always found that really beautiful, same in other places, New Orleans and things like that. And I wanted to delve deeper into it, and the opportunity presented itself, and now I'm really studying the ancestral story of carnival and how us in the diaspora also use it as a form of resistance.
Nice. I love that. I love that you're doing that and that you're, pulling those pieces together. That's your next book.
Yes, probably. I got to get through this doctorate first. Give me a
Well,
couple of years.
you will have already laid the groundwork and you can just take,
That's true.
your dissertation and everything.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and
Yes.
approach this, right?
Yes.
On a different level. So what is tell me a little bit more about the connection between the healing and the heritage. So, what are you finding?
Yes. I'm finding so many different things. I'm finding that dance can be a way to express your lived reality. So, for example, with Afro-Caribbean dance, there are characters that the ancestors used to play. Some would be acting out what they were experiencing in a negative way, and some would be making fun and mockery at the enslavers, and others would be about connecting to their spirit. And I've seen that across the diaspora. I see, for example, in the Middle East, dabka and those dance and movement practices are the form of resistance. I see it with the indigenous communities in, what's known as the States now. And all of these different cultures have movements that were about either connecting to spirit, either resisting, colonialism or resisting harm, and connecting to culture. And I think it's so important to retain that and also witness that for each other. So I love, for example, seeing like the Maori people of New Zealand do the haka, and I get chills watching their indigenous movement. So I really think there's something beautiful about all of us like learning our own heritage, but then also learning from each other.
Yeah, and so like what you're saying is it's an act of joy and justice, right?
Exactly, because not every day do we need to be in pain, do we need to be angry, do we need to be sad. Also, being in our joy is one of the biggest acts of resistance that we can have. And if anyone here hasn't been to a Caribbean carnival, I highly recommend. They're all over Europe and the States and Canada as well. It's joy, it's pure. You can't leave there without being happy.
Yeah.
You'll probably have to take care of your knees and your feet and everything else, because you'll be dancing nonstop.
Yeah, I definitely need to make sure that I attend
Yes.
I don't I'm feeling like I don't know that I have. I'm probably just, remembering something that actually didn't happen, but I feel like I was in New Orleans and was part of something where they were throwing out beads, but I think I made
Yes.
part out. Like I think I was just
Yes.
on the back streets and they were just throwing it from the top, but not the carnival. Oh, you know what? I've been to Caravana. That's what it is. Caravana.
Oh,
I'm
exciting.
like,
Yes. Yes.
I'm remembering something. I love that.
Yes.
All
Yeah.
right. So now let's move into legacy, power, and community. So what does empowerment look like to you right now?
So, empowerment for me personally is speaking my truth, but with kindness, and living out my core values. So, one thing that's really important to me with this anti-racism work is coming at it from a place of non-harm where possible. So I don't want to attack anyone or shame anyone for not knowing how to be anti-racist. I didn't know at one point, and I'm still learning new things every day. So for me, it feels very empowering to approach this work from a place of compassion and kindness. And we're all learning, and I really want to, still move forward in that way, and that makes me feel very, very empowered.
And so, what is community healing versus like personal healing, and why is it just as critical?
It's just as critical because a united people are a strong people. So when we come together against injustice, we can do way more than we can alone. But if we're feeling broken and unhappy and unhealthy, we're not going to be able to give to the unit. So it's that symbiotic relationship between, looking after ourselves so we can look after others, looking after others so we can look after ourselves. And I truly believe that's the way forward, which is why I do love to work with allies as well, and my friends who are allies, because we need literally all of us on this healing journey, on this anti-racism journey, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely. And community is huge right now. It seems like,
Yes.
pre-recording I've had, we're talking about community. And again, the situation that we're in is pushing us into community, right? So if you're not leaning into the collective, to your sisterhood and family, whatever, we definitely need to, right? Because it is that us versus them. It's truly that, right?
Yes.
We didn't ask for it, but it is here. And so we do have to find a way to resist, the various
Yes.
ways to resist and coming to community, because we shouldn't be doing it alone, right?
No.
We
Yeah.
need that. We need others. And I also wanted to say, when we were talking about dancing and joy and whatnot, like right now, ever since the election, Black women have been leaning into rest, right? We have been our tour. We're like, you know what? We put in the work. We tried to tell no.
Yes.
So look, okay, we're done. Like
Yep.
we're gonna go up garden. Like we're gonna go out
Yes.
there growing things, and we're dancing, and we're getting in community and loving on one another, and reclaiming so much of what we lost, and learning about ourselves. And so we are definitely doing that now. Hosting intersections, I know it's brought many powerful moments, but what's one that stayed with you? One that's
One that stayed
really.
with me, which I mentioned in my book, actually, I had a lovely, lovely man on there called Anthony Chang, and he's mixed East Asian and white British, and he's been grew up in South Africa, New Zealand, and the UK. And he talked about when he went back home to East Asia, he thought because everyone would look like him, he would instantly fit in. And he realized, oh, wait, I'm an outsider here. And that's an issue that so many of us experience. So as I mentioned, obviously my mum is from Barbados, but my dad, he's African American. And if I was to go back to Africa now, I mean, there's a sense of connection, but it's not exactly home.
Yes.
I'm in the UK, it's not exactly home. So having that brought to light of we're all actually experiencing a bit of displacement actually makes you realize you're not the only one. And then when you bring that into the light, we can start thinking about, okay, how do I feel at home within myself so that I don't have to worry so much about not fitting in here or there or there because I feel at home in myself. So that was like a really powerful moment in the series for me.
I love that. And that's another thing that I really promote as well, is it starts with you, right?
Yeah.
Getting in touch with you, loving on you, getting to know you, in touch and tune, all those things, right? First, before you, or an and, but more so getting in touch
Yes.
with you so that you can appreciate the outside, the external a little
Yeah.
bit more, but being grounded and whatnot. So what's one wellness practice you can't live without?
Movement. Movement. It means everything to me. Even on days if I'm not feeling well or I'm tired, it might be something as simple as just laying on my yoga mat and just moving my body from side to side. But on days when I really want to get that joy, I will be, well, as we say in the Caribbean, on the road. I'll be on the road. I'll be dancing. I'll be moving. I'll be moving my waist. If I need to connect with God, I'll be moving slowly. I'll be moving in prayer. Whatever it is, I will be moving.
And so when you said that, I'm for those who are watching, I'm on those who are listening, I grinned because I can sit for hours and just watch TV and hours. So there's often I'm not moving that much. However, today I was out and right. It's a beautiful day here. Finally, it and I was walking and I'm like, oh my God, I feel so good. I'm glad to be outside, to be moving. I even kind of stretched a little bit. So yeah, the movement is great. And I can incorporate more movement even while watching, right? Like I can stand up.
Definitely.
Yeah. And so
Yes.
I don't, but I can. And so I do want to impress that upon those who are listening, watching. You can move. Like even if you're a person who like, oh, I'm watching TV, stand up for a bit. I had read
Stand up for a
something.
minute.
Yeah, I read something the other day that, you know, you sit for 30 minutes, you should walk for 5. And why you have to go outside? No, you can just walk around the house. You can walk around in circles. The point is to move.
And it always makes us feel better. There's rarely a time when you move and it feels like a bad idea
No,
afterwards.
you're right. You're absolutely right. So what's a quote, mantra, or book that keeps you grounded?
My book, of course, is Trisha Hersey, Rest is Resistance. And that book changed my life.
Okay.
It changed my life because it allowed me to rest. It allowed me to accept that rest is okay. And with Trisha's work, that she says in there, rest for your ancestors who couldn't. And as someone who enjoys giving, I was like, yes, this is a way that I can rest guilt-free because I'm doing it for them.
That's deep. You know what? I just remembered. So I was in London in December and I went to Tate Modern and they had an exhibit, Zanele Moholy. And okay. And so when you leave, there was labeling that rest is resistance. And it just expressed that they had created a space for you to rest because after going through Zanele's exhibit, it was kind of it could be heavy, right? Because the exhibit was focused on the South African LGBTQ plus community, and you know, and just about some things, you know, having to go through, and just again, it could be heavy. So they created a space to rest afterwards.
I love that
Yeah,
we need more of that.
absolutely. So we are about to wrap, but before we, first of all, are we going to see Beyonce or what? Like, I'm trying to find a friend in the UK who wants to go. Like, what's happening?
I chose Usher over Beyonce this year, unfortunately. I
Oh my goodness. Anyway, well, I'll probably be back for Beyonce. That's that
know. Well, let
my
me know.
one and only concert or one and only time seeing Beyonce live was in the UK at Tottenham for Renaissance. So more likely I'll be back to see her. But before we wrap, what's one thing you want to leave the audience with?
You've got this. I believe that you can back yourself. There's going to be down days, there's going to be up days, but overall, you have the power.
Love it. Well, LaDonya Lawrence, thank you for lending your voice on Women of Color in Intimate Conversation and enjoy the rest of
Thank
your
you for
day.
having me. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
This Woman Knows Media is committed to your growth and evolution into the best version of yourself. We provide you with monthly podcasts.
There was no such thing as homophobia the way we know it. And there
people
was no
will say and do all the things in which they
crazy
want
corn.
To.
I get all these views and has won an NAACP Image Award for
quarterly magazines, great online content, and virtual and in-person events. Continue your personal evolution and subscribe today. Go to www.thiswomanknows.com.